I'm Gab. He's Jules. Blue skies over West London. Slightly stormier skies over Paris. We'll get to that in a minute. We've had a week where we've had a lead change in the Premier League, which I feel people should be getting excited about when we talk about Arsenal over Chelsea, although that only lasted 24 hours because, of course, City won on Wednesday. We've had Napoli not winning the title. We've had Real Madrid dropping points. We've had a bunch of stuff going on. But there is a story that overshadows everything else, and that concerns Lionel Messi. Correct me if I'm wrong here, the capsule version. Lionel Messi went to Saudi Arabia. He thought he had days off, supposedly. Went to Saudi Arabia on Monday morning.
Yeah.
Did the most ridiculous photo shoot, like on Instagram.
Yeah, he's
like
a country ambassador. So
he's a country ambassador. Of course, he's got a big deal with Saudi Arabia and stuff. Paris Saint-Germain said it was not authorized, and they have fined him 2 weeks' wages.
Yeah.
But fair? Is this what happened?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. He did ask for permission. They said to him, if we win against Lorient on Sunday, then you and the other players will have Monday and Tuesday off, so you can do whatever you want.
But Achraf Hakimi said, let me ruin his plans by getting sent off.
But if we don't win against Lorient on Sunday, then Monday there will be a warm-down training session. Tuesday will still be off, but not Monday. So you'll have to report for training on Monday.
All right.
He said no problem. He played the game on Sunday. He knew exactly what would happen in case of a win or a draw or a defeat. He left very quickly the stadium on Sunday afternoon, and then didn't show up on Monday.
So Messi's camp, their version of events, is that he has his commitment with Saudi Arabia, which the club knew about. He's already had to postpone this commitment for his photo shoot twice.
Yeah, including one, for example, after the Bayern elimination.
Exactly. And so essentially he had to go. And it was too late to change the plans when Paris Saint-Germain told him. So clearly we have two things which are, it is a he said, she said situation, right? Because you're telling me they said, yeah, you can go as long as we don't lose to Lorient. And they're saying, no, you only told me I could go when everything was already arranged. There's some dispute about whether he was already on the flight or not and what that means, whether he was physically in the air or whatever.
So that's not true, because he flew on Monday morning and he knew as soon as the game against Lorient finished at 6 p.m. Paris time on Sunday, he knew they was training the next day, like the whole squad. Everybody else was there training on Monday. They have a WhatsApp group where they got sent the schedule for the week. So he knew very well at the end of that Lorient game, there's training tomorrow. He decided to ignore it and to fly to Saudi Arabia. That was his choice. But he also knew that he was going to expose himself to some sanctions, because you don't show up for work on a work day, your employer's not going to be happy, and rightly so.
The sanctions are 2 weeks' wages of fine. I don't know if it's the same in France. That's the maximum that you can actually fine somebody.
Yeah, I think so. No training with the first team, no games with the first team.
1.7 million
something like that, yeah.
Euros, roughly, something like that. I'm assuming we're not going to see him play for Paris Saint-Germain again. There's what, four games left?
Five
games left.
Yeah, there will be.
He's got the 2 weeks. There's no reason for him to come back and play again, because realistically, I know there is a semblance possibly of a title race, but the gap is 5 points. It's not going to happen. And if you bring him back, you're only doing it so that the Paris Saint-Germain fans can boo him, because they're very angry, yes?
Yeah, I think so. It'd be interesting to see what happens. One, when he comes back, where does he train? Who does he train with? On his own, with the reserve team? I don't know what's going to happen. And then once the suspension is over, is he going to come back straight away with the first team squad, like if nothing had happened? Will he play? Will he want to play even? He might not even want to do. Do you do like, could it be a Cristiano type of, let's finish the contract early? I really don't know what can happen. The thing is, I think PSG felt they had to act for too long. They were very lenient and far too tolerant and kind to some of the superstars, from Ibra to Neymar, on when they didn't show enough discipline.
Right.
And that the
horse has bolted. I mean, this is going to be the reading, right? Over the years, Nasser, because it is Nasser who decides this, you have coddled your superstars ahead of the club. And now, when maybe it's convenient because his contract is expiring and whatever, you go and you put him through this.
Yeah. The most interesting, not so, I mean, this one is very interesting, of course, and everybody talks about it. And Messi fans all around the world are not happy. as my Twitter feed, you know, and Twitter notifications and Instagram notifications. No, but let's see what happens next then.
I feel a need to break into song about this, right? I don't know why he's leaving or where he's gonna go. I guess he's got his reasons, but I just don't want to know. Because for the past 2 years, I've been hearing speculation about Messi. That's when you say, Messi. Who the hell?
Messi.
Yeah, there you go. All right. I apologize.
That's really good. You're such an amazing songwriter.
Thank you. It's not me. It's not. Just living next door to Alice. Classic 1970s rock. Anyway, it's still this. I feel like I'm in some kind of weird echo chamber here, because nobody else has emerged, and I'm going to make my last appeal to Lionel, to Jorge, to the Messi clan. You have a chance to do something special. You have a chance to do something meaningful with what is left of your career. You've achieved. You've done so much that's meaningful, right? Doing something meaningful means going, and by the way, before the Cristiano guys get upset, same thing for Cristiano, had he gone back to Sporting Lisbon. Do something meaningful. I like stories. I would love it if you went back to Rosario. If that's not possible, go somewhere and do something meaningful with what is left in your career. Going to Saudi now is not meaningful. Going to Inter Miami, to me, not meaningful.
Why? Why not MLS and Inter Miami?
Because
he could have a huge impact there for soccer in America, in
I'm
all of America.
Sure, at this stage of his career, with the climate, playing him in the summer in Miami in 1,000,000% humidity, walking around the pitch and whatever, I don't.
No, but it would still be good, as I can see in Ligue 1 most weeks, even walking, even at 35, even in being like he is now, he's still way too good for most of the teams in Ligue
1. No,
like
I need to be way too good for anybody in MLS. I'm not
so
disputing that.
So he would still be good.
I don't know. I just want something romantic. I don't want to hear the commercial aspect.
Is Barcelona romantic? Is a return to Barcelona
in his case
romantic?
No, because I also actually, believe it or not, Barcelona fans, I care about Barcelona as well. Right now, we've reached such levels of absurdistan. Right now, as you know, Barcelona are so far up Spit Creek financially that, you know, Araujo and Gavi are still registered as B-team players because they can't even register two people who are already there, okay? Yeah. So now they're saying, oh, no. And there's a serious risk that they might not be able to play in the Champions League next year despite probably winning La Liga, right? Mm-hmm. There is that possibility.
Yeah.
And this is nothing, this is before you even get into the Negreira case. This is purely the amount of losses that they've taken on, right? I've actually heard people with a straight face in Catalonia saying, oh, but it's okay because Laporta has a plan. What he's going, the way we're going to pay for Messi when he comes back is he's going to come in and because we're banned from Europe, we're going to get permission. We're going to do a tour of Asia on those midweeks and we can go and play Barcelona against Al Hilal or whoever you want and get paid. And we'll make more money than we would have made if we were in the Champions League. Oh, yeah. But this is the level of absurdity and hysteria that has gone into it, right?
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm not going to blame anybody for negotiating the best possible contract to the end, but I just think it's worth remembering. In his last 4 years at Barcelona, Messi earned 515 million euros, okay?
Yeah.
He took a big pay cut when he went to Paris Saint-Germain, funnily enough, right? So massive dereliction of duty on the part of Bartomeu and the people who gave him that contract. That's not on Laporta, because he came after. But to some degree, if I'm Messi, and I know that my club, you know, the club where I grew up, the club that I'm still really, really attached to, is close to potential insolvency.
Yeah.
Because of this, because of all the money that they gave me. And if I truly profess to love the club, something romantic, go back and offer your services for the league minimum, for free. Do what Gasol did when he went back to Barcelona, right? That would be romantic.
He might do that. I mean, let's remind everyone that Barcelona right now have to cut 170 million, so 170 million of their wage bill, of their current wage bill. So that's even before Messi signs for 10 million a year, 5 million a year, 20 million a year.
They can make some of that back with selling players.
Yeah, so they will sell Kessié and Ansu Fati and Rafinha, those guys. Then, sporting-wise, the question is, does it make sense to bring back a 35 Leo Messi in this team. Where is he going to play? How are they going to play with him? Because it would be very different to how they play now without him. Because Busquets, Gavi, Pedri are, you know, starters. Lewandowski is a starter. You've got Dembele. So you play him wide. You play him. So this just, I just want him to go back to see how Xavi deals with it all. And I think this is going to be a fascinating journey to see where does Messi fit, how he fits. La Liga has been quite average this season. So I think he will still have an impact, certainly domestically.
Right.
But again, I would really, really love to see him. I would love to see him anywhere, really, and see what kind of impact he has.
So the other option, of course, is Saudi. And... you know,
right now, it's the only offer on the table, by the way. This only offer he has right now.
But what about all those people who keep telling us, and we know the same people, he's 100% going to Inter Miami? People
no, but I think they're preparing. We saw, I mean, Ron Garber the other day was again mentioning here, saying like, we've always
found... Ron Garber.
What did I say?
You called him Ron.
Ron? Yeah, sorry. Sorry, Don. My bad.
He gets, yeah.
Saying, well, we can find a clever way. We've always found clever ways of attracting those players. Right. This, we need more than a clever way to bring Messi with the current way structure in MLS to bring him to Inter Miami. But there's still no offer right now, whether you want to compensate the loss of wages by an investment within the franchise. And we know how close they are to Jorge Mas and in a way to David Beckham. But
even then, compensate. What are we talking about? I mean, I'm sorry.
If you give him 20% of the franchise.
I hate to be like man on the street here talking about this, right? But I just genuinely, I mean, I was fortunate. I grew up privileged. But I cannot fathom how, if you have made the money that these people have made. And by the way, there is a difference. There is a difference between having a net worth of $50 million where you're extremely rich and having a net worth north of $200 million.
Yeah.
You know, there really is a massive difference. If you're net worth of $50 million, you're not flying private all the time. $200 million, you really move the needle. Once you've reached that level, part of the reason you have all this money is you get to do what you want to do.
Yeah.
So my question is, does he want to go to Al Hilal? Is that what he wants? You know, and money shouldn't come into it because... you're going to retire at some point. It's on the horizon, right?
Yeah.
So make these last years count.
No, I agree.
And maybe it is Inter Miami, but this idea that John Garber has to tie himself into knots so he can make the deal financially attractive to Lionel Messi.
No,
honestly, for me, I would say, Messi, you made all your money. You come here, you get exposure, you get to make as much money commercially as you want because you're in a big market, and you help take MLS to the next level. We'll pay you whatever we can pay you. It's not going to move the needle for you.
I think that's
what I would do.
Yeah.
And I would just challenge him with it. And if you'd rather go to Saudi, go to Saudi. You know why he's going? Because you know people in Saudi aren't stupid. Saudi has a pretty serious football league already with a lot of passionate fans.
Yeah.
These people are educated about football. They know that Cristiano coming at his age isn't like Cristiano coming 10 years ago. They know that Messi coming. None of them believe that Messi and Cristiano are there because they've suddenly become massive proponents of the Saudi project and they want to turn... nobody believes this.
Yeah.
It is a big artifice. And we saw this. We see this all the time. We saw it in MLS. We saw it in the Premier League when they started bringing in all these... when the Premier League suddenly had money in the mid-90s and they brought in, you know, big aging stars from elsewhere. People said they're only here for the money, right? Yeah. That's not how you sell and build.
No.
And... so I think you also have to think about that. How realistic and how solid is this product? I mean, if MBS wakes up tomorrow and says, this is stupid.
But it's one year. It's 1 year.
How do you know it's 1 year?
I mean, maybe two maximum. They would not give him more than a two-year deal. And I think the current offer is a two-year deal anyway. Like Cristiano had a two-year deal. So, but I think that Inter Miami are in such a strong position now. Massively. And that's what Don Garber, who's a really smart guy, I think whatever they're doing right now in New York, in the offices and in Miami, just get the best deck possible, the best PowerPoint you've ever made in your life, and just with the best advantages that you can. Maybe it doesn't have to be $100 million a year, but maybe it could be shares in something, pre-agreed partnership with big US brands. I don't care. Anyway, like a actor career in Hollywood after, I don't care. But right now, Barca are nowhere near, nowhere near being able to offer Messi anything and still be okay with La Liga financial fair play, you know, all of that. Because as you said, it depends a lot on who they sell and KC and blah, blah, blah. So they're there, but they're not really there. PSG, gone. Al Hilal and the Saudis are just, like you said, it's a project. It's concrete because they have an offer on the table for the Messi camp based Saudi Arabia. And there's, if you're into Miami and MLS, you are a very different project, but you could be, in a way, more attracted football-wise maybe than the Saudi League. So I think that Inter Miami have never had, have never been in a stronger position than they are now to attract Leo Messi to MLS and the US and et cetera, et cetera.
You know, I think and I hope that somebody else will come out of the woodwork. And again, I go back to the romantic aspect of it. I'm sorry. Daniele De Rossi was not Lionel Messi. Mm-hmm. He played until he was older than Messi.
Yeah.
At Roma, club legend, blah, blah, blah. He had offers. He had offers, and, you know, obviously mid-table teams, but in the Premier League and whatever. And he said, I've only got so much time left. I'm going to go play
for Boca.
For Boca Juniors.
Yeah. Was that a success?
I think for him personally,
yeah,
it was. But because he wasn't a success on the pitch because, you know, he didn't play great and he was older and whatever. But he went there. He made almost nothing.
Yeah.
Right? But he says, I got to play La Bombonera for Boca Juniors. I fulfilled. When I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When I was a kid, in addition, obviously, to playing for Italy and playing for Roma, right? Those were my shirts. The other one, I love the shirt. You know, Diego Armando Maradona wore the shirt,
fair
right?
Enough. Maybe Messi doesn't have that kind of dream. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe
he fulfilled it with Barcelona and now he doesn't need to go anywhere else.
And maybe Rosario is not just going back there. It's not right now what he wants. I don't know.
But I don't know. I just find this. Look, it's not going to tarnish his legacy because of what he's achieved as a player, right? But I think it speaks to this idea that when footballers reach this level, the people around them who, it's almost like you're exploiting, you know, some kind of, I don't know, iron ore or gold mine, and you need to squeeze as much as you can for as long as you can out of it.
Yeah.
And that is frankly what I find really, really depressing about this whole thing and pretty unseemly. I had a couple more things I've written down here just because we're on the Paris Saint-Germain question.
Yeah.
Why does poor Neymar get picked on now as well? What's he? I mean, I know. He's been injured for a long time. There's reports, man, there's videos of people outside Neymar's house.
50 fans, 50 right. Ultras.
Was he there?
He was there, yeah.
Well, why are they annoyed with
him? I just think they're so angry now because.
Why don't they go to Nasser's house so they don't know where he lives?
Yeah, I mean, he was not in. He's not in Paris. So they went to the PSG offices in Boulogne, where neither Nasser was there, or Luis Campos, or Galtier, and they had a big protest outside there.
And they were singing not nice things about Messi.
Yeah, and Messi was heavily insulted or criticized. Nasser, well, I mean, the whole hierarchy of the club and the ultras are asking for all of them to go, including Nasser Khelaifi. And then some of them went to Bougival, where Neymar lives, outside his house, to sing, like, basically get the F out, to put it that way, or F off, if you want, whatever translation you want to use.
Why was he there? He's injured.
Yeah, he's in recovery.
Okay, I just thought.
I mean, I don't know. He put out on his own social media. They've just left. They were outside my door. They've just left.
So okay.
He must have heard them, which is not nice. And I can understand. You know, the relationship between Neymar and the ultras has been, on and off. Let's put it that way. And they're very angry. I think ideally they would want Neymar not at the club next season. Again, we've said that many times, I don't think anybody will come and get him from PSG, so he will surely be there.
You said something off air before, which I want to go back to, which is that a week ago, Paris Saint-Germain had 4 days off.
Yeah.
And that was the time, we mentioned it on the show, that's when Messi went to Barcelona with his 15 suitcases. And you said, why couldn't he have done
exactly.
The photo shoot then?
Yeah. That's what I don't get. I mean, listen, he felt, and his camp felt, that to honor the contract they have with Saudi Arabia, they had to go then. They'd postponed twice already. Everything was ready for him to arrive. He could not go this time. Why not the 4 days off? That he knew before, regardless of the game at the weekend before, they were going to have the 4 days off.
But he has 15 suitcases to take to Barcelona. Antonella can't carry them all on her own.
True, that's true.
And his kids are only little.
That's very true. Although Antonella and the kids went with him to Saudi Arabia too. So, you know, they could have done that 4 days in Saudi Arabia, in Riyadh.
Well, he was only in Saudi Arabia for 24 hours, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So he could have done 1 day in Saudi, 3 days in Barcelona so that he could make sure his luggage got to Barcelona safely and then come back.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, I'm glad that at least this was very helpful for him, for his knowledge of the world, because he discovered how green Saudi Arabia was. Loads of forest, he said. Good. He can spend more time next season there if he wants walk into the forest.
Which, by the way, apparently it is true. It's not, Saudi Arabia, for those who don't know, is not one giant desert. Wouldn't know I'd describe them as forests, but they do have mountains.
They have greens, the
potential of skiing there. But it's just in the pictures, by the way. Like, what kind of photography? You're spending $400 million on Messi. Spend some money on a real photographer, too. Honestly, if you're the person who took those pictures, it looks like the cheesiest, stupidest thing. And if you notice that Antonella's dressed in some kind of Arabic garb, Messi's not. What, like, they don't pay him enough for him to dress him up, too? No, did you see that? He's wearing, what he always wears.
I don't know. They had everything planned, apparently, so... I don't know.
And is a picture of him with, a goat or a sheep in the desert?
I mean, they did all the traditional... I think, you know, this is what they wanted. They said that since the last time he went over, and we saw when we were in Qatar, for example, we had loads of publicity, like TV adverts on beIN Sport there, of him, but on CGI stuff in Saudi Arabia, which looked really weird. It didn't look like it was Messi. So I understand the need for them to, like, get more photos and videos in for this kind of stuff. But,
all right, last person to my question. There's been a story rumbling for a long time that Paris Saint-Germain were paying, I just need to get your verification on this, that they were paying influencers to write nice things about them, influencers on social media. One of these guys, somebody named Sabri, came out and said, yes, they've been paying me. I can't say, my contract with them is up. I can't keep myself in, can't keep this in any longer. They've been paying me €1,000 a game and so on. And then it seems like a few hours later, he comes out and he says, oh, no, that was just a joke. I haven't been.
Yeah. I don't know him personally. I know who he is. I don't know him personally. Certainly, they haven't been paying me, unfortunately. I don't know. I think.
Do we know? Are they actually paying these people or not?
I don't know. I mean, remember we had similar stories about Barcelona as well, creating accounts and stuff. This is different, of course. It's quite clear that they tried to push the brand as much as they could on many levels and things like that. So that might well be true.
It's weird that he says, they're paying me. And he's like, no, they're not. No. Like, that.
Yeah.
It's not a great look.
No.
Get to the bottom of it. I want to find out. Are they actually paying
me?
I'll ask
for you.
Okay, thank you. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough Messi. How about some Arsenal and Chelsea instead? Now,
Tuesday night, that was good.
It was good if you're an Arsenal fan, I guess. Less so if you're a Chelsea fan. I thought, all right, they've fallen behind. I thought there is a real chance the wheels are going to come off. They're going to freak out. What is it? What was it going into it? What, like 1-4, something like that?
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, Chelsea, still a derby. Surely Frank Lampard can't lose his 6th game in a row.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they do. And then it's like 3-0 in the blink of an eye. And it's all downhill. Do you want to praise Arsenal for the reaction, for the belief, fact that whatever he told them, you know, they said, like, look, table doesn't lie. It's out of our hands, but it's not over.
Yeah.
So let's put as much pressure as we can on City.
Exactly. That's all they could do. They reacted well. They started on the front foot, which they were always going to do. They've done all season, especially at the Emirates. I think they were surprised by how bad Chelsea were, certainly defensively, I mean, and rightly so. But it was good. The flow of the game was good. The big players like Odegaard and Xhaka, for example, Gabriel Jesus, responded. Arteta makes interesting choices because he dropped Martinelli to bring Trossard in. He dropped Holding to bring Kivior in as well.
We finally got to see Kivior.
I know. Two left-hand
centre-backs,
which is very interesting. And it worked really well. Again, I think you need to look at the opposition. And it was so bad that it may put the win in perspective a little bit. But yeah, great reaction.
You're making it sound as if Arsenal just beat Accrington Stanley. Okay. Who are they?
Well, no, I know who they are. But like, Chelsea are better than Accrington Stanley, just about.
All right, let's get to Chelsea. Poor Frank Lampard Jr.
Why poor?
He's coached 6 games because he's lost. He's losing.
Yeah, but some is on him.
It's 10 straight losses, counting the end of his spell with Everton.
Yeah.
Some Derby manager in the 80s lost 10 games in a row. I know it's obviously he's not going to continue. You're saying some of it is on him.
Yeah.
What should he be doing differently with his players?
I mean,
or is it just that his players are just waiting for the season to end?
No, I don't think so. Because they're an embarrassment. He's an embarrassment. They are an embarrassment. As a player, even low on confidence, you should have some pride and at least show more commitment than what they're doing now. I think it's him to motivate them. And most importantly, it's on him to stop making stupid decisions in terms of starting 11, players who play or start, tactical decision. I mean, I know he's out of his depth, but we said it as soon as he was appointed. I mean, you were a little bit more positive than I was.
You said
I've
it.
I've told you from the beginning, it was a huge mistake. It was crazy to give him that job and crazy for him to take it anyway.
All right, you said it.
I
like Frank Lampard, but I have to be objective. This is really bad. It's a difficult situation, but then you're not helping it. Can you explain Aubameyang to me?
I was going to ask you the same thing. The only way maybe is maybe he thought, which is still baffling in itself, but maybe he thought him going back, going to Arsenal again, you know, he would be so pumped for it, he'd be ready, he'd be... No, he's not. He's not even a footballer anymore. So why are you playing him in a game like this? Or any game for this matter?
I think the logic with Alba is that right now he's the only fit, you know, because people believe that Kai Havertz isn't really a center forward for some reason, not a view I share. If I have a center forward with Alba's characteristics, I can maybe plan a little bit for next season because we will have a real center forward next season, maybe, or maybe not, because it could be Nkunku, who knows. And so I get the benefit of allowing Vivel and stuff like that to assess the people around him. Maybe. I don't know.
In the end, you've humiliated him because you took him off at half-time. He touched the ball 9 times, made 6 passes, 4 of them were kickoffs. How humiliating is this? The only thing he did was play kickoff 4 times. I mean, this is just ridiculous. And it's Chelsea Football Club we're talking about. Again, one of the biggest clubs in the world. This should not be happening.
All right, let me ask you this, because people are obsessed with this story that Pochettino is definitely coming back. They're saying Pochettino on his way. I suspect it's because the people who look after him are the ones who keep saying this. Why not bring him in now?
If you were Poch, would you want to come in now in this chaos?
What difference does it make?
Well,
at least if you come in, then in the summer when you say, oh, I don't like this player, you can say, I don't like him because I trained for him for a month at the end of the season and I think he needs to move on, for example.
True, but you will have precedent for that. What if you get spanked by... So they will. The last 3 games of the season is Manchester United,
easy,
Manchester City and Newcastle.
City will have already won the title by then.
And you can get spanked 3 times and lose 3-0 each time, for example, let's say for the sake of it. Even Poch come in and with 0 time to prepare, might get smashed.
I don't have any evidence of this. I don't think Poch to Chelsea is as done a deal as people suggest. And I think that's the reason why he's not in charge of Chelsea right now. Adding more fuel to the Pochettino to Chelsea angle is something involving Romelu Lukaku.
Yeah.
Because, and this is a story that comes from Italy, but the idea is, obviously, Lukaku is on loan from Chelsea. Inter's financial situation is absolutely dire. Yeah, they'll make money from the Champions League and whatever, but he's got this insane contract, which he signed with Chelsea. He's on loan. He still has a massive book value in Chelsea's book, so if they let him go for nothing. I mean, I think the most likely outcome here is Chelsea extend the loan another year and pay a chunk of his wages.
Yeah, I think so too, whether to Inter or anywhere else.
But maybe this is part of Chelsea's negotiation, but what's come out is, Mauricio Pochettino is a huge Romelu Lukaku fan. And to be fair to Lukaku, Lukaku's fit again and he's been playing better recently.
Yeah.
He thinks Chelsea need a genuine center forward. They've spent all this money. They can't spend much more. So he's going to take Lukaku back. And so he wants to take Lukaku back. So Inter, if you want him, you better pony up the money, which money Inter don't have unless they sell Barella and Bastoni and whatnot. Are you buying any of this?
I don't think Lukaku is necessarily the profile as a number nine that Poch likes to play the way...
I was trying to think, has he ever had a center forward like Lukaku?
Definitely not. But that doesn't mean that cannot have a plan with Lukaku in it that works next season. But we all agree on the fact that they need a proper number nine. And number nines have different profiles.
We all agree. Like, I don't necessarily agree with that.
You don't agree that they need a number nine?
I think it depends how you want to play as a manager. If Pochettino or Lampard or Potter or whoever feels a need for genuine number nine, fine. But you don't need to have what you call a genuine number nine. And also this idea, and I made the point before about Kai Havertz, is somebody needs to tell me why we've labeled him and you say he can't play as a center forward, right? Because with a genuine number nine, Karim Benzema is not a genuine number nine either, right? Because he moves around the pitch. Harry Kane's not a genuine number nine, right?
They are more than Kai Havertz.
They're better players than Kai Havertz,
They're different profiles, but they're more of a nine than Kai Havertz.
Why? Havertz is big and strong. He's probably bigger and stronger than... He's not stronger than Benzema. But you know what I'm saying? And the fact that they've added Nkunku means that all those analytics guys who work for the Dodgers have decided that, maybe Nkunku's not a genuine number nine,
neither. No. I just...
If there is a plan, I'm assuming the plan involves Nkunku or Havertz up front for Chelsea. If there is a plan.
If there is a plan.
There is a Lavelle plan.
Because Nkunku was signed before and a different manager.
So maybe these were the Dodgers guys who signed it?
I don't know
who did it.
But I think it's a great signing. I love Nkunku. But it's just that Poch might think, if Poch is the guy, next season on the bench.
Do you like Nkunku as a second striker, not as a center forward on his own with wingers, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Which is the position he's played.
Yeah.
Finally, we've been tough on Todd Boehly.
Fair though.
Tough but fair, I like to think so. But man alive, doesn't he bring this stuff on himself, right? So he doesn't give proper interviews with journalists, but he likes to appear in conferences.
He loves
and stuff like
it.
So he appears with one with Mike Milken, who, for those who don't know, Mike Milken was a junk bond king financier, a very, very wealthy man. He was sentenced to 10 years in prison in the early 90s, I think. His son, Greg, was at university with me. Mike Milken also, he went to grad school where I went. He was later pardoned by President Trump, who we all went to the same university, funny that. Maybe he'll pardon me one day. But anyway, Boehly gives his interview.
All your sins.
And he talked about the mistakes they made. He talked about the learning curve. But then he also said some things which to you don't add up, yeah?
It's just, I love when he talks. Please, Todd, keep talking in those places and circles. And he says, we've struggled with all the markets. The French market, the Portuguese market, the Italian markets, they're all so different and we need to get used to it. We want to win, of course. We understand. We want to win. We've learned so much. But those markets, I was like, okay, Todd, so this is why when you buy a football club like that and you know nothing about soccer, which is this case, if you get the right people around you and you let them lead, they know the Portuguese market, they know the French market, they know the Italian, they know every market. They know the market in Islington, in London, you know, where they, you can right. buy fruits and clothes. They know every market because this is what they've been doing for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, right? Maybe for you, the markets are different.
For the guys
that you've appointed, Win Stanley, Vival, Stewart, whoever you want, your mum, your dad, the brother, the sisters, this is what they do. So no, the right. markets are not different for them. Well, they know them inside and out.
I'm giving the benefit of the doubt. I'm assuming maybe he's drawing a parallel with his experience in baseball where, you know, for better or worse, yes, there are players who come from Venezuela and Cuba and Puerto Rico, but they're all kind of in the system and it is one kind of big self, and Japan, obviously, yeah. but it is kind of one self-contained league and stuff like that. First of all, the market, certainly for the types of players that Chelsea are getting, actually is all one market. You know, yeah. there really isn't, you know, all these people that they've signed, they are professionals who go and do this. Like you said, like Vival knows them, they have agents, they know them, they deal with clubs, they're used exactly. to dealing clubs in different countries. So that whole thing is just absolute nonsense. If, again, given the benefit of the doubt again, were you maybe saying that, you know, whereas a guy who hits 40 home runs in double A, so you can assess it statistically against others, but maybe a guy who scores 40 goals in the German second division isn't equivalent to a guy who scores 40 goals in the Portuguese second division, and how do you account for that? Is that maybe what he was saying?
Surely not.
I don't know.
They spend 600 million every market possible, from Ukraine to everywhere. They've signed players from everywhere. And now, in May, it gives me the line of like, oh, it's tough, you know, because the markets are all so different.
I don't know. I mean, first and foremost, the one part you should be getting right is the PR side of things. And honestly, he goes from one footpath to the other. You hear Chelsea fans singing Roman Abramovich's name, which, you know, they've done before and I think will continue to.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think you should focus a little bit and either decide I'm going to be front and center but accountable, in other words, actually answer tough questions and not go with, I mean, poor Mike Milken. I mean, what's he going to ask him,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, who, by the way, is like 77 years old or something. Or otherwise, take a step back. You can still be the decision maker and oversee everything. You just don't appear in public. You know, a little bit like Stan Kroenke does, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's times he's been more visible, less visible, yeah. right? Even Abramovich, he said periods where he was there and he's not, but certainly the last 7-8 years, Abramovich says, all right, you guys run the club and I'll either, you know, renew your contract or fire you if I'm not happy, right?
Yeah.
Which, that's another style of ownership.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
he gave it the big one, bringing all his expertise from the Dodgers, since football in Europe apparently is 20 years behind that rousing success that is baseball, which is so wonderful and popular. They have to put a freaking clock on the pitches because everybody gets bored because the games last 3.5 hours, right? So now, look, the games are shorter now. Oh, great, so much more exciting. Meaning what? I spend less time doing something I'm supposed to do? Hey, think about the absurdity, right? This is supposed to be entertainment. It's supposed to be leisure time. People are supposed to choose to go to watch baseball.
Yeah.
And the way you make it more appealing is by giving them less time, less baseball. So I don't know how much we actually need to learn from you and that experience, but that's fine. If you want to be hands-on in that department, fine. Bring in an executive who knows how to do that. But either don't go talk to Milken. But also the other thing is, he realizes that if he speaks over there, it's going to come over here.
Yeah.
And people are going to rip him like we're ripping him, like we've ripped him before when he says silly things.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't even know, first and foremost, what he should do, because he's got so many things to do. But, you know, I think maybe he should evaluate whether he wants to continue to be the lead guy among the owners. Because I said, he's just one of many owners. Mm. Maybe there's somebody else. Maybe we want to see more in Bali.
Yeah,
you know,
maybe.
Who knows? We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough bully. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, guys.
Manchester City are back on top of the Premier League as they beat a depleted West Ham 3-0. Jules, it took a while to get going. But so are you going to praise David Moyes' defensive setup?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes,
I think they defended well. They played with a back five.
They had everybody out. No Declan Rice, no Suchet, no Aguerre.
They did really well. No Aguerre defensively.
But they had avenging Angelo.
Yeah, but so the setup is great. And I think Emerson's positioning, especially depending if it's a low block or a mid block, was a bit more in the five or in the four in midfield. Great. But that, so 45 minutes, you're good. Rodri hits the post, but apart from that, you're good. And then just like that, you throw it away. Downs, giving away a stupid free kick.
Right.
Ogbonna, I'm sorry, I know he's your mate. They're covering everybody, literally. And then once it's 1-0, then it was always going to be.
It's a set piece, and then it's transition.
Nah, they should not. They're one of the best teams on set pieces. They should not.
But is this a concern for City? Did you see some little flaws in City? No. Okay. Just checking.
Erling Haaland scored his 35th Premier League goal, breaking the record set by Andy Cole and Alan Shearer. He has 51 this season, Gab, in all competitions. But give some context, please.
So this is the context, right? And he's going to be top scorer with 35 or more goals this season. So I looked back through the history of the English top flight, because football didn't begin in 1992, and saw how many people have actually scored, you know, more than 35 goals in a season and been top scorer. And okay, it's happened, I think, 13, 15 times, right? Well, what's interesting, most recently in 1967, so already there's one data point, right? We're talking more than 50 years ago is the last time it's happened.
Yeah.
I'm guessing by the end of the season, he will probably have scored a few more goals. Obviously, everybody knows Dixie Dean's got the most with 60 goals. But what I think is interesting is how, I mean, these goal scoring numbers are from another time. Most of these guys, it was in the 30s when people scored a lot of goals. And then some in the 50s. The people who've done it, the only ones I'd heard of, are Jimmy Greaves, John Charles, Ted Drake, mostly because there's a statue of him at Arsenal and he later managed Chelsea to the first title, and obviously Dixie Dean. Like these other dudes, like, I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with Joe Smith or his son Bobby Smith or W.G. Richardson, who I believe is W.G. Grace's nephew. I'm not familiar with this, right?
Yeah.
But to give you the ridiculous context of what this means, of what he's achieving this year. Incredible.
Incredible.
A Mo Salah penalty gives Liverpool a 1-0 win over Fulham that sees them consolidate fifth place. But Jules, Marco Silva isn't happy with the officiating. And that Issa Diop on Darwin Nunez call.
Yeah, for the penalty.
He's right.
Yeah, I think he's right.
They got jobbed. Yeah?
I mean, you could watch it from every angle, on every slow-mo, every replay, whatever. I'm not sure there was contact between Diop and Darwin Nunez. I don't know exactly how it happened.
If there was contact, he's has his leg back to kick the ball, and the guy throws himself in front of his leg, if there was contact.
Yeah. I don't know. But Issa Diop, who is my boy, should have never been in that position anyway. You should not take that risk when you're well in the game. But I love Trent Alexander-Arnold's performance, again, to go back to the discussion we had in the last show. Napoli did not become Serie A champions on Wednesday night because Lazio defeated Sassuolo 2-0. It's only a matter of time, right?
Yeah, they kick off in a couple hours tonight away in Udinese. They only need a point.
Loads of fans happen. There.
No, it'll be the weekend. Jordi Alba scores and Barcelona win 1-0 yet again. This time against Osasuna. Jules, you impressed?
No, not really. No, but it's a win. It's a late win. It's a Jordi Alba goal. It's another 1-0 win. The 11th, I think, or 12th this season. It's another clean sheet. It's incredible. And I think the front page of Sport was the champion's goal or the league goal, if you want, because that clearly sets them very, very well. I mean, we knew it before, but they're going to definitely be champions. Roma drew 1-1 away to Monza, and Gab, Jose Mourinho had plenty to say about the referee of the game.
Yeah, so he was unhappy with Celik getting sent off for a second yellow late in the game. But he said, look, the referee isn't the reason that we drop points, right? No. He did not influence the game.
And they dropped again. They've dropped three games.
Yeah, they're seventh right now. But he said, he is the worst referee I have encountered in my entire career. He doesn't show empathy. He doesn't communicate. Technically, he's bad. And he said something which I think will undoubtedly earn him a charge. You can't go and say stuff like that. But he also said something which I think is really creepy. He said, you know, the problem is Roma aren't the sort of club that go and get bad refs to recuse themselves, right? We don't veto bad refs when they assign them to us and okay. say, no, give us somebody else, which used to happen quite regularly in the past in Italy and happens here in England too in the past. But maybe we should be. No, you shouldn't be. No. That's not, you should accept the ref and not go on and on about it. And I see a bit of a rift, some people suggest, between him and the club. Jules, more Mourinho.
Yes.
He also revealed that he was wearing a wire so that there would be a record of his dialogue with the refs in case he got unfairly sent off. Given what happened with Jurgen Klopp recently, is this the future? Yeah. Wires and body cams for coaches?
I love it. Please. I mean, this is box office, popcorn stuff. I want it. I can't wait to see. It's not going to happen. He did obviously remember the incident with against Cremonese and the fourth referee, and we've explained it many, many times. I would love to see it.
Body cams.
I would love to see Mike and ridiculous. How they talk to each other. Inter destroy Verona away 6-0 and move into fourth place with Atalanta, Milan and Roma 2 points behind and Juve 3 ahead. Gab Simone Inzaghi is vindicated.
I am vindicated. I've been telling you when they're dropping points. They're playing so well. They're attacking. They're doing things. Lautaro, I bet you love the little dink for his goal and everything.
Two goals, two goals for Dzeko.
I don't know if it's going to continue. But they are playing really, really well. They're playing well even when they were dropping points.
Yeah, that's true.
Two goals and two assists for your boy Antoine Griezmann as Atletico Madrid romp past Cadiz 5-1 and are now second. Jules, I think they're playing some of the most exciting football in Europe right now.
Yeah, well, they are. Gabi was fantastic. Okay, Cadiz are not very good. We know that. But still, they are sometimes difficult to play against or they make it hard for you. But they got blown away the first minutes of the game. I mean, the first goal by Griezmann, but the second goal, especially the 1-2 with Lemar in the box, is amazing. I've seen them doing back heels and 1-2s and movement. I'm like, what is going on here? Like total football stuff. I'm like, wow.
And they score, and then they try to score another goal.
It's great.
Which is not a Cholo thing to do.
No, and Carrasco is playing great. Even Morata. I mean, Morata missed some big chances. Of course he did. Also scored. It's great. And I know you dismissed me when I said that on Monday, but I think them if they finish second ahead of Real Madrid, I think this is huge. But it's still not psychologically and everything. The second half of their season is amazing. They are the best team in Spain right now. They're better than Barcelona. They're better than Real Madrid.
I mean, in the second half of the season, no question.
So, you know, this is...
Although, I'm putting my cooler hat on.
Yeah.
When Barcelona played the best team in Spain, Atletico Madrid, they beat them. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Which was a good game. Yeah, no, but you're right. A big Eder Militao blunder and a Dani Carvajal red card help La Real Sociedad beat Real Madrid 2-0 on Tuesday night and all but lock up a Champions League place next season. Gab, reason for Ancelotti to worry? Or just evidence that Real Madrid is not as good without Karim the Dream and Vinicius and a few others? Luka Modric wasn't there either.
First of all, something for Real Sociedad, because I know it's fashionable to say, oh, La Liga hasn't been good this year. No, generally they haven't. But Real Sociedad's had to deal with a ton of injuries.
Yeah.
They've been up and down. Yeah. I'm really, really happy for them that they finish, that they're finishing top four.
Yeah.
In this game, Real Madrid did not play badly. However, and obviously they gift them the goal, and then, I mean, it was just too stupid. Eder Militao, I'm sorry, I know, dude, you're Brazilian, and I know Ancelotti jinxed you when he said you were the best center back in the world, but what is it like that, oh, I'm going to try to turn this guy three times, like, crazy. You're going to lose the ball.
Crazy.
Like, don't do it in your area, right? Remember who you are.
I know.
And Carvajal should know better than get himself sent off. Maybe he wants to rest at the Champions League final.
How can you start Mariano Diaz, though? Why, if you Carlo, please give some time to Alvaro Rodriguez. Don't give me that Mariano
Castilla
guy.
Castilla need him.
And his hair like Princess Leia, whatever she's called in Star Wars. Like, don't.
Princess Leia.
Leia, please. Like, I don't understand.
I think it could give Jack Grealish some ideas.
Oh, my God.
He could pull it off. Leipzig destroy Freiburg 5-1 on the road in the German Cup semi-final. Jules, when they're good, they're really, really good.
Amazing. And again, talking about being blown away in the first few minutes, that's what they did to Freiburg. Dani Olmo on fire that first half. They were 4-0 up at halftime, a goal and three assists for Dani Olmo. Incredible. And when they all play like this, the same partition, it's just brilliant. And they destroy Freiburg, who they beat in last season's final of the Pokal. So well done to them. It's another final back to back. Well done.
Sometimes Christian Streich's teams look especially one dimensional.
Yeah. Milan are held 1-1 at home by Cremonese and start-up keeper Marco Canestecci. Gab, Pioli's heavy rotation. I mean, come on. Origi, Salemakers, the Ketteler. Well, I mean, all those Belgian together. Didn't really work, did it?
Okay, first of all, enough anti-Belgian bias. I'm going to punish you by bringing up...
You said before. Why is Origi even playing for that team?
I'm going to punish you later by bringing up Openda. Or is he a good Belgian?
He's a good Belgian.
Okay, all right. And Salemakers, by the way, scored last week and scored again. I'm glad you name-checked. It's Karnesecki, by the way, because he is an exceptional goalkeeper. Yeah. No, it didn't work. Only four starters out there, and the comedy goal. If you haven't seen this, go check it out. Kalulu and I think it was Shao, they run into each other. They don't even run into each other. Kalulu basically tackles Chow, and Okereke gets away for the goal. Like, they were unlucky not to win. Doesn't change the fact that they were, frankly, terrible in this game.
Yeah,
I know why Pioli's doing the crazy rotation, but, dude, you can't keep dropping points.
Yeah, why if they finish out of the top four?
And he's assuming at some point the Ketteler is going to do something.
Oh, I thought he was going to score, Lovin.
I know.
I want him to do well.
Leipzig will face Eintracht Frankfurt in the DFB Pokal final as they beat Stuttgart away 3-2. But Jules, Stuttgart are furious at that non-call when the ball struck Aurelio Buta's arm in injury time.
Yeah, and...
No VAR intervention.
And I thought it should have been, and they were 3-1 down, they came back to 3-2, that could have potentially
it
make
it... been lucky to come back to 3-2 with Frankfurt, a deflected goal
despite they took the lead, Frankfurt were good in that second half, and Vika and Kolumwani... But it's the semi-final of the Cup. You know, you should not feel like that. It's okay to be beaten by a better team, but not on a controversial decision like this.
Yeah, I take your point, but VAR is in the booth. Yeah, they look at it and they decide it. For me, it could well have been a penalty.
Yeah, me too. Juventus beat Lecce 2-1 and stay third. Gab, two guys who've been missing in action most of the season, Dusan Vlahovic and Leandro Paredes. Yeah, that's right. Showed up and scored. Leandro Paredes scored a goal for Juventus.
Not just that. It was a tremendous free kick. But I have my own theory.
Maybe they can
here.
Keep him now.
No, maybe Leandro Paredes wants to join Messi in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, my God.
And so he's like, oh, how do I impress the Saudi Arabia? Oh, I don't know. I'll actually play football today and do something useful.
Such a great plan.
The other thing with Juve, you take the lead. They can't control the game taking the lead. They can't even do that anymore, right? They suffered as well. Speaking of Belgians, I like all Belgians. You only like some of them. But my man, okay, is it Louis?
Luis?
Oh, Luis, Lane from Superman? Okay. Luis Openda scores his 18th league goal of the season as Lens beat Toulouse away on Monday.
Yeah.
Jules, this sets up their big clash with Marseille this weekend. It's a battle for second place. There's one point between them.
Yes, that's right.
Is it just a battle for second place, or is it a chance to reopen the title race given the way things are going to Paris Saint-Germain?
It could well be as well. You know, PSG might not win away at Troyes on Sunday night, and if before that there's a winner in their game, and I guess a draw will suit PSG, of course, if they both cancel out each other. But otherwise, on Saturday, they can put pressure on PSG, whoever wins this. So great. And Openda, we said how good he's been, especially since the turn of the year. He takes a cold shower in the morning to kind of, you know, wake him up.
A lot of people do.
And then he takes a very, very hot one just before going to bed, to sleep better. He wears those special glasses in the evening to not tire his eyes too much. He's got this personal kind of trainer, psychologist, sort of mentor, if you want, who gives him all those tips. It's great, I think great. There's a lot of players who should learn from him because that turn, in a way, well, not turn his career because he was very good at Vitesse last season, but it just helped him taking this level. He's 23 years old, you know. I think he's got a great future
ahead
of him.
He's a player and a half.
Yeah, definitely. Tottenham's hunt for a new manager continues. They like Julian Nagelsmann, we know that, but Ruben Amorim, Xabi Alonso are now reportedly also in the frame. Arne Slot was mentioned too on ESPN websites.
Well, if he was mentioned on... Okay.
Not just for us, but yeah, everywhere.
Yeah. I at least there's some consistency with the profile in the sense that, you know, these three are all younger managers. I have no idea how old Arne Slot is. Obviously, Feyenoord have done really well this year. Mm-hmm. My one concern is when you bring in guys, especially from Holland, who are kind of, I don't want to say he's a one season wonder, but
no, because they did well last season as well.
He did well last season as well, but you know, can he exist in a different context?
Yeah, yeah.
I think is often the question.
But you've been saying about Amorim though, no?
Amorim's been hyped for a while.
Yeah, true. Portuguese managers.
Xabi Alonso as well, very young. I think if you're Xabi Alonso, you haven't been by Liverpool or not, you build on that. I think these are solid. Of the four, if Nagelsmann doesn't want it, then I think, for me, the choice would be Ruben Amorim, who I think is ready to move, and I think would be very open to a move.
Yeah.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Plenty of reports out there that Jude Bellingham, of course we have to mention Jude Bellingham, has made up his mind and is Real Madrid bound. Jules, are you buying this?
Yeah. I mean, usually when a lot of, certainly whoever who wrote it for Marca has got a very strong connection with Real Madrid. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a lot of truth in it.
Maybe like 2 weeks ago, he was definitely going to Man City. Weeks before that, he was definitely going to Liverpool. Manchester.
Maybe it's just a bit of a... You know, you leak something that is not completely done. I don't know. I would like him to go to Real Madrid. I think it's a great opportunity when you have it. I think he would still have it later in his career if he doesn't go now. He's that young. But I think that white shirt would suit him well, to be fair.
Should Real Madrid go back to like a narrow 4-4-2, Valverde on one side, Camavinga on the other, Tchouaméni and Bellingham in the middle, Mbappe and Vinicius up front?
Oh, stop it!
Oh, no, there's no room for Kareem.
You are turning me on. Stop it! Valencia and Villarreal battle to a 1-1 draw, which effectively means Villarreal's hope for Champions League are gone, and for Valencia, still pretty much in danger of relegation. Gab, are you going to blame Peter Lim?
Of course, I'm going to blame Peter Lim. Of course.
Easy. I blame him for everything.
No, I did the whole thing. Right, they took a club which has a tremendous fan base, has been dysfunctional for many, many years, made bad decisions, made it worse, definitely made it worse, and then stopped caring and then made it like a point of pride. Like, ha, I'm old and I'm a bazillionaire, so I'm not going to listen to anybody. I'm not going to put any more money. I'm going to let this turn to crap. He should have been gone a long time ago. The whole relationship with George Mendes thing.
Yeah,
unhealthy, weird. This is why there should be oversight about owners. Valencia are a big historic club. I was actually thinking, if they go down, are they the biggest club of this magnitude to be... I'm trying to think, there was the last time...
La Coruña, maybe? Who? Deportivo La Coruña? Similar story?
No, I think Valencia are a bigger club historically. But I mean, maybe even around Europe, how far back do you have to go to find a club that size?
Yeah, like Hamburg going down, for example.
Hamburg, probably, right? Hamburg, former European Cup winners. But it's incredibly tight. This is why a lot of... late in the season, we love the relegation race. They're level on points with Getafe, who I think they brought back Bordalas, right?
Yeah.
So that'll be exciting football to watch. Valladolid and Cádiz on 35, it was said, Almeria 36, Espanyol behind them on 31. Two of these teams are going to go down.
Yeah.
Wolfsburg beat Arsenal 3-2 in front of 60,000 fans. It was actually 60,000 fans, not 60,000 tickets sold.
Full stadium.
At the Emirates in the Women's Champions League semifinal. Jules, Wolfsburg will be facing Barcelona in the final. You watch more women's football than I do. Are these the top two teams, women's teams in Europe?
Yeah.
Barcelona are,
yeah? So. Yeah, yeah. Nobody's and I think Wolfsburg, to be fair, are too. They were
better
very
than
good.
Man City and Chelsea.
Yeah,
and
I think so. But the level is rising for sure. This was a wonderful semi-final where Arsenal, maybe not as good overall, collectively and even individually.
But Arsenal missing like what, three of their top five players?
Yeah, four. We said no Williamson, no Midima, no Meads, no Kim Little either. So
Kim Little is one of their top five players.
Yeah, okay. She's very important in that team. And they still fought so hard. I think they could be very proud of themselves. They lost it really late in extra time by defensive mistake too. Otherwise, it would have gone to pens. But Wolfsburg are great. They're playing great. They've got some wonderful players too. It would be a great final. The only thing I would say about the final is that it's a 30,000 seater in Eindhoven on June the 3rd. And I don't know why. I think they would easily have filled a much bigger stadium with those two teams. And I think it's a bit of a shame that maybe they might, and maybe not, it's just my view, they underestimated maybe what a big final this could be. And you could easily have filled 40, 45, maybe 50 somewhere. But hey, it's going to be a great occasion, I think, for women's football, because it should be a great final.
I totally agree. And the other thing as well, when you're putting it, obviously you don't know who's going to be in the final. But
no, true. But
for those who don't know, Eindhoven is in Holland. It's very, you know that you will likely have either a German team, so it's really not that far away. You can take the train there, or you will have an English team. It's just a pop across the channel. Barcelona a bit further away, but it is a massive brand, fans everywhere. And even if, you know, if it's a 50,000 seater, you don't sell out, you know, girls' schools, local tickets, like, you know, you can put bodies in the seats. Yeah. Even if, and I agree with you. I think they could have sold it out.
Yeah, definitely. Barcelona director of football, Mateu Alemán, will be leaving the club this summer, with many reports suggesting that he's going to Aston Villa. Gab, he had a year left on his contract. Is it weird that he's moving on?
Yeah, just a little bit. I mean, ask about it, say, oh, it's political. I'm like, yeah, political, how? Like, he knows that supposedly going to stick around and help this summer and then move on.
If you're Aston Villa, you want him in for the summer, right? If you
They have the other guy, Johan Lange, or whatever his name is, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah, Johan Lange. Yeah, Lange.
Also, he's 60 years old. So it sounds like, well, a couple of things. First of all, it sounds like he's got zero faith in the Leavers and Laporta and stuff like that, fundamentally, right? Yeah. Because you have a contract, you know, even if you've somehow fallen out with Laporta, you think you're going to be marginalized. What? You think like, oh, I mean, the dude's 60. Presumably he's a Barcelona fan, right?
You would think so, yeah.
It's not like, oh, I need to go and make a paycheck because I need to go and, you know, pay my rent next month. I need to go work in Villa. So from his perspective, the fact that he's moving on, to me, suggests that he knows that there is a massive storm coming.
Right.
He doesn't want to spend his summer walking, you know, talking to players, getting them to take pay cuts and whatever. But then if I'm Aston Villa, I said, right, well, what have you actually done? So last summer you went and you spent all this money on, you know, Rafinha, Ferran Torres, you know, Lewandowski at his age, on that money. Can you not read a balance sheet? Did you not have the strength to stand up to Laporta? So all these things are questions. I mean, I don't know if the guy's good or bad or whatever, but to me it certainly sets off alarm bells that he's walking out in the last year of his contract. Should we pick on Barcelona some more?
Yeah.
Sorry, Barca fans.
No.
Barca TV, the club's in-house channel, will be closing for good on June 30th. And according to reports in Catalonia, 150 people will be losing their gigs. Is this all about the club needing to make budget cuts, as they say, so that they can register Gavi and Kunde
and Araujo?
Or is it, as some suggest, just about club channels kind of being a thing of the past, and, you know, we can still produce all this content, we'll just put it out on social and YouTube and whatnot?
I think so. I think it's probably a bit of both, or even both are valid, Gab, in the sense that they used to all have, if you remember, 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, the channels. Now maybe Real Madrid, and I think maybe Manchester United and Liverpool are the only ones left.
I think Chelsea TV is still around.
Oh, is it?
Okay. Milan TV, Lazio channel.
Okay, fair enough. So maybe more than I thought, to be fair.
Udinese even have their own TV station. I mean,
properly that you can get on, like, cable television or local
TV in Udine,
okay, I mean, maybe, you can see why, because it costs a lot of money to run a TV channel, even if it's your, you know, in-house club channels. And you're right, there's other ways maybe of, you know, of showing off what you do within the club than having a 24/7 or something TV channel. I don't know, and maybe it's also for cuts. I mean, I thought the Leavers had destroyed half of Barca TV, so I must have missed something somewhere anyway. But,
yeah, that's the other thing with the Leavers, right? So the whole idea of, oh, we're doubling down because, and we have to spend all this we're spending now, but, you know, it'll be for the future, and this will allow us to make an exponential leap with the sponsors and blah, blah, blah. Well, surely Barca TV would have been your vehicle for showcasing it. But I don't know.
After scoring a great goal at the weekend against Napoli, we mentioned on Monday, Unai Emery gets a hat-trick against Salernitana against Fiorentina on Wednesday night. Gab, Unai Emery didn't want him at Villarreal. And yet he's scored 15 goals this season in Serie A, which is more than Villarreal's top two scorers in La Liga, by the way. Did I miss a trick there?
Ah, you can't resist trolling Emery, can you?
There, what, 3 years? Something like that? 2 years?
No, this it's worked out fantastically for Salernitana because, you know, they're getting on loan. They have an option to make the loan permanent for $12 million. He's 26 years old. 15 goals on a bad team, although they'll probably stay up, is a lot. He was offered to every team in the Premier League. I know one of the agents had the mandate in England.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to know. And it wasn't, if you remember, so last season he came off the bench a lot for Villarreal, but the year before that, he played a fair bit, scored a fair amount of goals.
And before that, he was great in France.
So, it was interesting. You actually put this question down in our WhatsApp, and I thought, oh, he must be Paris born and bred. But he's not. It's a really cool story. He's
from Oyonnax.
Oyonnax, which is like some kind of ski resort near Switzerland.
Jura Mountain.
That's awesome. I wonder if he skis too.
He started, you know, he didn't go through an academy properly. So he went through the lower leagues, like many have done in France, played for Jura Sud, who were like in the fourth division or fifth, and then were picked up by Reims for the B team. And then made it into Liga, and then it's a great story.
I wonder if he skis and he's the best Senegalese skier in the world.
He might be. To be fair, I'll ask him.
LAFC beat my Philadelphia Union to advance to the CONCACAF Champions League final, where they'll face Leon.
Yes.
Jules?
Yeah. Well done to LAFC and Denis Bouanga, who scored again. I mean, what an incredible signing he's been for LAFC. Really. The holders in MLS, and they'll have a big chance against their lone team that's not doing great this season. I think they're only six in La Liga MX right now, so I think LAFC have a chance, you know. And it's not often that we say that whoever represents MLS in this competition wins it in the end, so let's see what they do. Former Juve president Andrea Agnelli got married over the weekend. Well done.
Remarried, actually.
I mean, not for the first time. He got married, and his cousin and fellow Juve shareholder, Lapo Elkan, had some interesting things to say on social media, Gav.
He did. So Lapo
was he bored during the wedding or something? Like, did he feel like...
I'm not even sure he was there. There were only about 40 people there, and it was...
What, you would not invite your cousin?
I don't, maybe he was. I genuinely don't know. But apparently there were only about 40 people there. So presumably his wife has friends and family members as well. I don't know to what degree extended. But Lapo Elkan is the artsy, creative brother of the Elkan brothers. His brother John is the serious one, the guy who runs Fiat Chrysler, and is Juve's main individual shareholder. I think it's kind of an open secret that they don't see eye to eye, and also with Agnelli being forced to resign and everything that's happened at the club. You know, I think the other shareholders are like, wait a minute, what have you done to our asset, which is a financial asset as well as obviously the club, the family club that we support. But whatever, he criticized them for sending away Marotta, and I think implicitly the Ronaldo signing as well. But then he also said something about the Super League. He says, like, you know, if you're going to do a Super League, why don't you include more clubs and have conversations with stakeholders out in the open and say, we want to do this, and have an actual negotiation.
No, so what? Meaning
so basically, meaning...
Agnelli did that on his own in everybody's
mind. Although there's no question the Elkans didn't know about it until later. But I say this because everybody's so polarized, anti-Juve, anti-Real Madrid, and people like... And I'm like, Lapo Elkan clearly loves Juve and is as much Juve through and through as his cousin is. And he's stating the obvious, the thing that most football fans should understand. You can't sneakily go and force this through in the middle of the night like he did and expect people to like you. You know, if you can make a case for it, make a case for it. You know, use your negotiation, use your leverage and say we're Real Madrid and then Manchester City and United and whatever, the big clubs, we want to do this and negotiate. That's fine. But don't do it in this sneaky, underhanded way. And I think this shows, actually, I hope this empowers more Juve fans, many of whom are still very, very loyal to Andrea Agnelli, to kind of take a step back and say, wait a minute. Yeah, this was a stupid thing to do. This hurt our club. And I think, you know, and hopefully these people will speak up a little bit, because otherwise it's just, you know, So certain people shouting about the Super League all the time and how UEFA are criminals and how the English are turncoats and whatever. When, you know, when the reality, I think most football fans say, well, wait a minute, why did we need to behave this way? Former England manager, yes, that's how I want to introduce him. Really? Big Sam Allardyce, undefeated England manager, as I recall, is now in charge of Leeds United, replacing Javi Gracia. Now, I'm going to ask you about his comments about Pep and Klopp. But first, I just want to point out, the man is a genius because reportedly, if this is accurate, for 4 games work, so less than a month, he's going to get £500,000 plus another £2.5 million if Leeds stay up, which is a possibility.
They're not in the bottom three, right?
They're not in the bottom three, that's right. Which means he's a genius and prorated. He's going to be by far the highest paid manager in the world if he pulls this off. So well done to you, Big Sam. But we'll grab the headlines or his comments about Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp.
Amazing. You're Sam Allardyce. You have been out of a job for 2 years. You lived in Dubai. You had messages or whatever you did for 2 years. You're coming back in the Premier League, right? In this context, I don't even know why Leeds gave him the job. He might keep them up. I don't care. Do whatever you want. But it makes no sense to me. Anyway, and then your first press conference, you give us this line, which is going to stay forever. We will ever always remember Sam Allardyce coming for the last 4 games of the season saying that nobody is above him, nobody is ahead of him in the game, nobody is better than him, not even Pep or Klopp or Arteta. I'm not better than them, but they're not better than me. I mean, this is just box office. This is,
okay, so I will say this. I don't think he's deluded.
Really?
What I do think, no, I don't. I do think he's saying something. I think it's one of the great things about being old is you can say things. And he comes out, he says that. And if then he keeps them up, he can say, see, when I said that, everybody thought I was mad and deluded. But no, I wanted to say, show that how much confidence I had in my head. I think I can go and beat you. It's like when Rocky goes and faces Apollo, he knows he's got no shot, but in his head, he believes he can beat him.
Okay.
And then it's like when the US fans, right? When they all say, like, when they all sing, I believe that we will win, and then they go and they win the, well, it hasn't happened yet, but maybe one day it will.
Okay.
Can we not give Sam?
No.
All right.
Sam Allardyce is nowhere near a good manager like Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp, even Mikel Arteta. He's 68 years old. There's a reason why he hasn't had a job for 2 years.
He was a real innovator many years ago with the style of football that
didn't
always play.
But many years ago.
Many years ago.
Yeah, not anymore. Thank you very much. Gianni Infantino is threatening a TV blackout in Europe's big 5 countries. So England, Germany, Spain, Italy and France. Which would mean that they would not get to see the Women's World Cup this summer. Gab, what's this all about?
So basically, as you know, they used to sell the men's and women's World Cup rights together, with the youth ones and whatever. FIFA were under pressure to spin them off, treat the Women's World Cup as like its own competition, raising its own money and so on. This way you help market it better. It's not some weird appendage that you get, which everybody agreed with and I think was the right decision.
Yeah.
The problem is, and he's also increased the prize money for this, but the problem is, broadcasters, despite the fact that it does get high ratings, he's not happy with the offers he's getting from broadcasters. He's doing his job. He is trying, he's taking a hard line, and he's trying to get these broadcasters to pay up for the Women's World Cup. Now, the difficulties, not a coincidence, there are 5 European countries. Obviously, the game, as you know, you're going and it's in Australia, so they don't know about the ratings and so on. Many of them are public broadcasters as well.
And kickoff times, because it'd be 9 a.m., 10 a.m.
But he's saying, all you people who keep slamming us for not doing enough for women's football, you say it's valuable and commercial, you know, sell it. You guys now put your money where your mouth is, right?
Okay, how long ago was this World Cup given to Australia and New Zealand? 4 years ago? Is it every, they do it all 3 years before?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Why 2 months before the start, we still don't have those agreements in place? I agree with you, and Infantino's position is right and he fights for it. But we should not be in this position where 2 months before World Cup, French national team doesn't even know if they will be on television in their own countries.
They've been negotiating all along. They've been there because it's a negotiation, right?
Yeah,
it's a negotiation, and he feels that the broadcasters aren't valuing this enough, that they can't make enough money out of it. And look, in the end, I'm sure it will be on television, right? In the end, it's going to relent. But he's saying, you guys can just go and crap on FIFA all the time. If you say that we're bad and blah, 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 you got to show me that it works. And look, I think, I don't know the numbers that are out there. I'm not a TV guy, but we all saw that the ratings were very, very big at the last World Cup in France and the ratings for the Euros as well. So I don't know. He's doing his job right now. He's negotiating. Anybody's negotiating sometimes. Yeah, if you act a little crazy.
He should not be in this position anyway.
But, you know, he's counting on the fact, I think, that the FA in France and in England, the women's football fans are going to go, hey, BBC, you're a public broadcaster. Why are you putting the Men's World Cup on and not the Women's World Cup? That's what he's counting on.
No, but they want to.
They're
going to
put pressure on
if
it.
If he thinks that 10 million is not enough for the rights or 20 million or whatever.
And then you know what they're going to do. They're going to come back and saying, oh, but you play this, you pay this doofus entertainer who is unfunny, or you pay this much on these programs and whatever. Now pay for the women's game.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it's going to come down to. He's fighting a PR battle on this. He's playing his role. It's up to the broadcasters to play their role and negotiate.
Yeah.
Jules, that brings us to an end. Well, we got to come back on Monday.
Oh, yes.
We got title races up and down the land. And by the time we're back on Monday, Napoli could well be Serie A champions for the third time. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.